L'chaim, indeed. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bevarah. Okay, sorry I'm late. We were doing Mechiras Chametz. And even though I've been doing Mechiras Chametz virtually since Purim, of course, all the Mechiras Chametz comes in this week, the week before Pesach. I want to talk tonight about Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya was is the opening section of Magid, the opening of our Seder in many ways. And I wanted to talk about this section tonight. Now, I'll start by saying that Halach Ma'anya is in certain ways a strange section of the Haggadah. If you look through the Gemara and the Mishnayos and Maseches Pesachim, many parts of our Haggadah, many parts of the Magid section of the Haggadah in particular, are recorded as central to the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, to the mitzvah of telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of Higadata Levincha, of telling the story of, telling to your children the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, from which the Haggadah derives its name. The term Haggadah comes from Higadata Levincha. And Halach Ma'anya, you're certainly not going to find in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara. You'll find the Manishtana. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim that lists the four questions that are supposed to be asked. Notably, the four questions that appear in the Mishnah are not the same as the four questions that we have nowadays, because one of the four questions in the Mishnah pertains to the Karban Pesach, which we no longer have. But you will find the four questions there. If you look in the Gemara, you'll find Avadim Hayinu, the story of slavery to freedom. You'll find Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avosenu, the journey from polytheism to monotheism. You will find a portion of Arami Oved Avi, the long section in which we go through the psukim of what we call Mikra Bikurim. The farmer would bring his fruit to the Beis HaMikdash. He would recite a special passage highlighting his gratitude to Hashem that started with the slavery in Egypt, extending to freedom, redemption, coming to Eretz Yisrael, and reaping the produce of Eretz Yisrael. You'll find Pesach Matzah Umara, Kosholo Omar Shlosha Dvarim Eilu BaPesach Lo Yetzah Yedei Chavaso. Pesach Matzah Umara, the fact that you have to mention Pesach because Hashem passed over the houses. Matzah, because it was the bread of our Geula, of our redemption as we were leaving Mitzrayim. Maror, in commemoration of the bitterness that the Egyptians inflicted upon us. All of those you will find in the Mishnayos, in the Gemaras, all those you will find in Maseches Pesachim. Halach Ma'anya, you will not. It was a later addition to the Haggadah, as the Rishonim already highlight. It was added in the later, possibly Amoraim period, possibly in the period of the Gaonim. It was a later addition to the Haggadah. And yet, it has become a kind of central feature of the Haggadah, for obvious reason. Again, it opens up the Magid section of the Haggadah, even though it's a later addition. It is the opening salvo of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Many of the classic stories pertaining to that have entered the Jewish canon, pertaining to Siddurim of great rabbinic leaders, of Gedolim of the past, center around the invitation of Halach Ma'anya. It's an emotionally stirring component of the Seder. Halach Ma'anya, as we'll discuss, is an invitation to others to join our Seder. And in that sense, there are several stories that center around the invitations that were issued by Halach Ma'anya. I'll just give you a couple of examples. One is a famous story about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Many have perhaps heard this story. It's a story. Rabbi Akiva Eiger was one of the great rabbinic leaders of Hungarian Jewry, and really global Jewry, but particularly Hungarian Jewry, in the early 1800s. He was, again, a towering Talmudic figure. He's mostly known. Most stories about Rabbi Akiva Eiger are about his Talmudic brilliance. To this day, when you talk about a kasha of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, a question of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it's known as a penetrating question that really opens up a halachic analysis, that opens up a sugya. But the story is told about Rabbi Akiva Eiger that he invited lots of poor people to join him at his Seder, and in the spirit of Halach Ma'anya. And the Seder is set, everybody is ready to begin the Seder, and as they pour everybody a glass of wine, one of the poor guests at the table accidentally spilled his cup of wine, and wine spills all over the white tablecloth of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, of the Gadol Hador. So you can imagine the mortification of this individual who's really just trying to have a Seder and instead ends up ruining the Seder table of the greatest rabbinic figure of his generation. And the story goes that without hesitating for an instant, Rabbi Akiva Eiger immediately flipped over his own cup of wine and made a complaint. Ah, this rickety table. I've always had such trouble with this rickety table of keeping my wine in the cup because the table can't stand still. So again, it's funny because most stories, as I mentioned a moment ago, about Rabbi Kieger are about his otherworldly Talmudic brilliance. And here you just have a very stirring story about someone making somebody else comfortable at their Seder table and saving them, sparing them from embarrassment. Another story that I'm fond of telling is the story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who also used to invite the poor and the destitute to his table. There's a story that's told that one time he invited an almana, an elderly woman who was living alone, to his Seder table, and he invited her children and grandchildren to join his Seder as well. And over the course of the Seder, of course, every child is telling their Divrei Torah, and you know how it works. Every child comes home with a Haggadah this large, with 100 Divrei Torah on every single line of Dayenu. So each one is giving their Divrei Torah, and the Divrei Torah are going for a long time, to a point that the students of Rabbi Akiva Eiger were saying to him, you know, this is going on too long. We have to finish our Seder. Why do we have to finish our Seder? There's a halacha that's again, a well-known halacha among some, that the Seder needs to be finished, or is supposed to be finished by Chatzos. You're supposed to eat the Apikomen by Chatzos. It's a machlokas tanoim. And the opinion of Rabbi Lazar is that you have to finish your matzah by Chatzos. And they said, we have to finish our Apikomen. The Seder is just going on and on and on. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter keeps pushing them aside, keeps waving them aside. And he's getting into the Divrei Torah. He's telling this one how beautiful the Divrei Torah was, and he's adding another proof to that one's Divrei Torah. And he's just invested in all these abundant Divrei Torah, these excessive Divrei Torah that all these children are sharing. Finally, the Seder ends. The Seder practically ends by the next morning, and all the students come over to him and said, "I mean, what happened here? We're supposed to be observing the proper halacha. We're supposed to be finishing the Afikomen by Chatzos. Why is it that you extended the Seder so long?" And he said to them, you have to understand proper halachic hierarchy and values. The whole din of Afikomen v'zbanazeh is midrabanan. The notion that we finish by Chatzos is a machlokas tanoim, a ikra din, you could probably go after Chatzos anyway. It's a chumrah. It's a chumrah to stop by Chatzos to make sure that we were yodzei l'chol adeos. He said, here you had an almana. Did you watch her face when her grandchildren were sharing Divrei Torah? Do you see the pride that she had, the joy that she had, just from listening to her grandchildren sharing words of Torah? Your mitzvah of being mesameach, a poor almana, particularly in the spirit of Simchas Yontif and like, which is something that we'll circle back to later, that is far more, in terms of our weighing halachic values, that is far more central than the chumrah of finishing your afikomen by chatzos. Again, a stirring story that surrounds this notion, this invitation that we issue at the beginning of the Seder to all the poor and the destitute, everybody to join us at our Seder table. So it has become a very central piece of the Haggadah, of the Seder liturgy. But the question is why? What is it truly all about? And why do we use it to start the Seder? So what I want to talk about tonight are three classic questions pertaining to Halach Ma'anya. I want to assess how all three of them relate to each other, and perhaps how the three of them collectively reflect the importance of Halach Ma'anya and why we use it as the starting point of our Seder. First question that I want to talk about is why Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic. It is the section of our Seder. Most of the Seder is all in Hebrew, as we would expect. Halach Ma'anya is in Aramaic, which is, a noteworthy feature of the Halach Ma'anya. Number two, I want to talk about the term Lach Ma'anya. What is this Lechem Oni? What does it mean? We often translate it as poor man's bread. Is that an accurate translation of Lechem Oni, or is it not? And then number three, I want to talk about, why is it that we start our Seder with an invitation? Why specifically the Seder? Why does it appear here? What is the significance of this invitation? And why is it, again, the opening section of Maggid? We start with the question of why it's in Aramaic. Now, perhaps the most classic answer for why it's in Aramaic is, anyone? Times the Gemara. Okay, interesting that you say that. Well, that's not the answer that I learned when I was growing up. I always heard that it was because, I'm sorry? Don't understand? So the Malachim don't understand. There's a classic answer that I always heard. And that is an answer that appears in the Rishonim. If you look in the Ritva, in his commentary in the Haggadah, of course the Ritva was Rabbeinu Yom Tov ben Avraham, one of the major Chachmei Sfarad, one of the major rabbinic figures of Spanish Jewry in the 12th and 13th century, the 13th, I'm sorry, and 14th centuries. He was, the Pirush of the Ritva, the commentary of the Ritva has become a classic staple of learning Gemara. It's a classic commentary on the Gemara, and he has a classic commentary on the Haggadah as well, in which he incorporates many of the comments of earlier Rishonim of rabbinic authorities that preceded him, and includes his own comments as well. So he says, Yesh omrim tu kadesh lo yikantu hashedim etzlenu. V'she'eno makirin b'lashon targum. There's this idea that is expressed by Chazal that somehow Shedim are these demonic characters, these demonic figures, these spiritual entities that don't have our best interests in mind. they do not understand Aramaic. So because they don't understand Aramaic, we have the Halach Ma'anya in Aramaic in order so that it should be a language that they don't understand. Now, later the Ritva suggests that perhaps it is so that not just that these Shadim, these, again, nefarious spiritual entities, don't understand the language that we are using, but he says it is so that Malachim will not understand the language either. Now, the Ritva's comment on the Malachim is actually interesting. He suggests that perhaps the Malachim would come and be Mekatreg Aleinu. They will testify against us on this night of redemption. Here we have a night celebrating redemption, but perhaps we don't fully deserve that redemption. And we're concerned that perhaps the Malachi Ashare, some angels from the heavenly host, are going to indeed testify against us, to marshal their forces against us, in order to make a case that we're not reserving of this redemption. His language is V'yesh Omrim Kadesh Lo Yakiru HaMalachim Bikatrigu Aleinu Shanu Misparim Mefalzeh Biyaskiru Avonosenu Shein Anu Kedoin Ligael. Maybe the Malachim are going to report to Hashem that perhaps we're not really so deserving of redemption of Geula. Here we are celebrating a redemptive state, and perhaps they will come and testify that we don't deserve it. Now, to me, that's noteworthy for the following reason. Why would we suspect that Malachim would be testifying against us, that these angels they're out to get us? Like, what is that all about? It seems like the concern is that in our opulence and extravagance, perhaps we're showing off our freedom and our luxury to such a great degree that it's going to create spiritual problems. We have a term for that in halacha and hashkafa. What do we call that when you're too extravagant? And ayin hara is what we often call it, right? It's like a kind of ayin hara that you're being so extravagant over the course of the Seder that perhaps malachim are going to testify against you. And that's a theme that, let's file away, it's something that we'll return to later on, this theme of extravagance and opulence at the Seder and what its proper role is. Now, I'll just add that another component of avoiding the Malachim on the night of the Seder is, this is not expressed internal to the Ritva's commentary itself, but is the fact that on the night of the Seder, we seek to circumvent any intermediaries between us and Hashem. And that is expressed in the Haggadah itself. In the Haggadah, we say that on the night of the Seder, all the miracles were done lo al yedei malach, lo al yedei sarach, lo al yedei shaliach. It was not done by any kind of divine messenger, any kind of spiritual agent of Hashem. It was done by Hashem himself. And that's also expressed halachically as well in our Kriya Shema She'alamita, in the special Kriya Shema that we recite before going to bed on the night of the Seder. We skip the sections that refer to Malachim protecting us. We still make our prayer directly to Hashem that He should save us, that He should protect us, the Bracha of Hamapil, and the recitation of Shema itself and the like. But we skip the sections that refer to Malachim protecting us. On the night of the Seder, Hashem Himself protects us. And I think that's just a very powerful theme. Theologically in general, but particularly insofar as the night of the Seder often focuses on young children, it's really one of the points that I really try to drive home on the night of the Seder. It's important to let children know that, of course, Hashem always protects us, but on this night, He focuses on us in an extra special and careful way. And it's important to highlight to kids that Hashem is always there to protect you, that you always have the ability to turn to Hashem for protection, that He's always watching, that there's nobody more powerful than He is, and He has the ability to do anything. I think that theme of hashkacha, that theme of extra protection that is central to the night of the Seder, is indeed a particularly powerful theme and a poignant theme for young children and for them to understand in their lives. So all those explanations of why the Aramaic pertain to circumventing spiritual entities which can't understand Aramaic. But perhaps a more pshat-oriented approach that some of you suggested, that I heard some of you saying before, and it is the preferred approach of the Ritva. He says, v'hanochon, the proper approach to this, v'fisha zeh eino miseder ha-mishnah ela mitikon ha-amoraim tiknuhu. So this is not from the Mishnah, as we said a moment ago. This is something that occurred later than the Mishnah, unlike other sections of the Haggadah. This was a later institution. This was added later. And therefore, they tiknuhu b'lashon babli k'dei she'yavinu oso hakol ki b'lashon hazeh hayu regilim l'daber b'babel. He says, because this was added later in the times of the Amoraim, and because you're issuing an invitation for everybody to come to your Seder, it only makes sense that invitation should be issued in a language that everybody understands. At the time, Aramaic and Babel was the vernacular, and because that was the vernacular, when issuing an invitation to everybody to come join the Seder, that was the language that they chose in order to issue that invitation. Many have the practice, my father used to do this when I was growing up, to translate the Halach Ma'anya, to issue the invitation in English. And we didn't translate all the parts of our Seder, depending on who our guests were. We would translate more, we would translate less. But in this instance, if indeed the whole purpose of the Halach Ma'anya being in Aramaic is that, so that is the vernacular and people can understand it, it makes sense that at the very least this section of the Haggadah should be translated in order so that people can properly understand. So that is the Aramaic section of Halach Ma'anya and different approaches as to why it is written and recorded in Aramaic. Now, what about this term Lach Ma'anya, Lechem Oni? So again, Lechem Oni is a phrase that we're familiar with. Like I said before, it's frequently translated as poor man's bread. But there are actually lots of different approaches as to what Lach Ma'anya really means. What is this Lechem Oni? There are three approaches that are recorded in the Gemara itself. Actually, before I share what the Gemara's recorded approaches are, what would you say if I asked you why is it poor man's bread? What would be the reason for that? What would you say? It's not because of the price, I could tell you that much. But I think very often the reasons that we're taught in school are not necessarily the reasons that are recorded in the Gemara. Flour and water, it's basic. Okay, that is recorded in the Gemara. Okay, good. Doesn't have time to let it rise. Okay, that's recorded in the Gemara as well. Okay, so again, you're surprising me. I always heard that it was because we break the bread, right? We break it, and that's what poor people do, right? You save it because you're leaving the prusa for later on. And that is indeed one of the approaches that is recorded in the Gemara. Well, that is recorded. We'll get back to that. The Gemara begins by noting three possible approaches for Lach Ma'anya. The first is that it is indeed... That is that you bake it very quickly. The Gemara records that back in the olden times, when poor people were baking, they would bake very quickly. For what reason? Baking was expensive. You had to pay for something to fuel your oven. I guess you still have to do that. You have to pay for gas. Back in the olden days, they would have to pay for whatever form of fuel they were using to fuel their ovens. And if you were poor and you didn't have so much money to fuel your oven, you would want to get the bread into and out of the oven as quickly as possible. And therefore, you would try to bake very quickly in order to facilitate maximal time for your oven usage and maximal bang for your buck when you were trying to bake. Of course, we know that matzah needs to be baked very quickly. The maximum is kedei hiluch mil, which we consider to be 18 minutes. Most of our matzah nowadays is baked way faster than 18 minutes. This does not spend that much time in the baking process, but it does need to be baked quickly, and that is one of the opinions in the Gemara. As we noted, another opinion is that you just broke the matzah. Now, it happens to be that the feature of breaking the matzah is also a critical piece of Halach Ma'anya. If you're asking why we start Halach Ma'anya at the beginning of the Seder, part of the reason, as much as I'm going to argue that it really does set many of the themes for Magid, the immediate motivator for Halach Ma'anya is not Magid, but Yachatz, right? It's really following what happened previously. Yachatz, you're breaking the matzah, and then you are making a verbal declaration about what the matzah is and about what it represents. And so it really follows directly from Magid. When you pay attention to the Seder, and you're sensitive to the themes of each individual section, they very often flow directly one into the next. Sometimes it's not immediately obvious how they flow one into the next. What does the Seder of the Tana'im and Bnei Brak have to do with the Mishnah and Brachos that's quoted next? And the like, you really do have to try to figure out what exactly the flow is, but when you spend the time, it's you actually see that the Seder is really, again, one narrative flow. One section flows immediately into the next, and Halach Ma'anya emerges directly from Yachatz. And in that sense, the approach to Lechem Oni that says a poor person breaks their bread and saves some of it for later is evident here as well. Another approach that's in the Gemara itself argues that Lach Ma'anya does not refer to ani as in anios, as in poverty at all. Rather, the Gemara says it's lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. The language of anya refers to the speech that you do over the lechem. It refers to the back and forth, the exchanges of the Seder, the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. All the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, all the brachos and mitzvos that you're doing over the matzah, that is what the term anya refers to. Lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. But again, there are other approaches that are offered by the Rishonim as well. One being that lechem oni is poor man's bread because it consists of only those basic ingredients. In this sense, for those who are at the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, the Shabbos Agado Drasha this past Shabbos, you will note that lechem oni contrasts with what term that we have for the opposite? Matzah ashira, right? Matzah ashira, you have rich and poor, right? Matzah ashira refers to bread that is enhanced with additional ingredients. It is not just flour and water, but it also has oil or honey or sugar or egg matzah. That's all matzah ashira, so the reference of richness is not referring to the people that eat the matzah, it's referring to the constitution of the matzah, the ingredients that are placed in the matzah. An enriched matzah is a matzah that has enriched ingredients. Lechem oni The poor man's bread is a bread that consists of the most basic ingredients of only flour and water. And then you have one final approach that is attributed to Rashi. We have one commentary on the Haggadah that is called the Miyuchas L'Rashi. That means at one point it was attributed to Rashi, and now we're not really sure that Rashi wrote it, but it's somebody from within Rashi's school. It was one of his students, somebody who went to his shir, something from somebody, perhaps one of his children or grandchildren, somebody from the school of Rashi. And here we have probably the most interesting and creative approach to Lechem Oni. Rashi says as follows. Lafishihi asiris ha'efa, because the shear for matzah is asiris ha'efa, degamina lame omer shi asiris ha'efa, because we learned that from the omer, the karban ha'omer, which was asiris ha'efa, dechsib be'efa, omer asiris ha'efa, who? Behu shi'ur minchas ani. There's a lot in that line of Rashi, so let's break it down. Rashi starts by saying that the shear of matzah is asiris ha'efa. That's a Talmudic measurement. That's how much flour you needed to make the matzah. And Rashi makes two equations. Number one, that's the equivalent of the Omer. The Omer, we think of the Omer as the Sfiras HaOmer, but of course the Sfiras HaOmer, the counting of the Omer, was a count to a Karban HaOmer, a special mincha that was brought in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, that was brought from flour, from barley flour, and it had that same requisite shear of flour, that same requisite amount of flour that needed to be brought, and that is the Karban of the Minchas Ani, the Karban Mincha of the poor person. Now, what does that refer to? So this refers to a halachic concept in the world of kachim, in the world of karbanos, called the karban ola v'yorid. There was a certain karbanos, let's say a person did a particular kind of sin, there were certain sins that it was brought for. There were certain sins that were brought, that the karban that you brought as atonement for the sin was in line with your financial status, was in line with your economic bracket. If you were very wealthy, you would bring an animal karban, which was the most expensive form of karban. You were bringing livestock as your carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. And if you were more poor than that, you couldn't bring a full animal. You would bring two birds. The birds was the second tier down. That was a lesser carbon. And that those would be brought as a carbon in their place. And if you were truly poor, if you were truly destitute, you would bring a carbon mincha. You would bring a flower offering. That would be your carbon ola v'yoreid. That was the minchas ani. And we call matzah lachma anya, poor man's bread, as an implicit reference to that carbon that the poor person would bring. Because it's the same amount, it's an implicit reference to the carbon of the ani that he would bring in the Beis HaMikdash. And many of the later Rishonim wonder what in the world matzah has to do with this carbon that the poor person would bring. Like, what ma'anyan shmita eitz har Sinai? Why in the world are we associating these two things? There's no immediate relevance of this carbon to the Seder. Why is that so special and significant that we're opening up Magid with this reference to the karban brought by the poor person? That's a question that I want to file away. Now, before we answer that, let's move to our third question, which is, why do we offer an invitation specifically here? Why is it at this moment in the Seder that we offer an invitation? Why is it specifically the Seder that we offer an invitation? We don't offer invitations at the beginning of other meals. Theoretically, we could have offered an invitation at the beginning of every Shabbos meal. We don't choose to do that. Why is it that we offer an invitation specifically at the beginning of the Seder? Now, here, too, different answers are offered. On one level, it's based on a comment of the Rambam. Rambam says that whenever you have Simchas Yom Tov, the key to Simchas Yom Tov, the key to enjoying Yom Tov, is not just basar v'yayin, is not just having meat and wine. That's part of it, the Rambam says. You're supposed to have meat, you're supposed to have wine, you're supposed to have physical enjoyment and physical indulgence over the course of Yom Tov. That's part of Simchas Yom Tov too. But he says true Simchas Yom Tov is making sure that the Levi, the Ger, Yasom, the Almana, making sure that the destitute have a seat at your Seder, at your Yom Tov meal as well. And the Rambam is very poignant language for this. The Rambam says those who indulge physically over the course of Yom Tov, but don't invite others to their Seder, that don't invite the destitute to their Seder, the Rambam says that's eno simchas Yom Tov. It's not true enjoyment of Yom Tov, but rather, areis simchas kreso. He says the festival of your stomach. That's what you're actually celebrating. It's not true simchas Yom Tov. Real simchas Yom Tov is making sure that you share the joy of Yom Tov with others and making sure that they're able to participate and take part in that festivity and joy as well. So we issue an invitation to make sure that we're setting the proper framework for this major meal, which is, after all, a Yom Tov meal, which is part of our Simchas Yom Tov. We want to make sure that others are able to partake as well. But of course, that doesn't explain per se why it is specifically Pesach that we issue this invitation. Why not Shavuos? Why not Sukkos? Those are also days when we have Simchas Yom Tov. Indeed, if you look at the Torah itself, the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov actually never appears in the context of Pesach. It appears by Sukkos several times. It appears by Shavuos once. It never directly appears by Pesach. We learn it out through Gzeirah Shavah. We learn it out through the fact that, oh, all of these are the Shalosh Regalim, they're the Chagim. If it applies by the others, it must apply here as well. But if you look at the Torah itself, it doesn't apply here. So why do we issue the invitation specifically here? You may say it's a technicality. This is the meal that has a formal liturgy, a formal text. And in theory, if we had a formal text for our Sukkot meals and for our Shavuos meals, then we would start with this as well. But perhaps there's something more unique to the Seder in particular. Rashi, once again, or the Miyuchas L'Rashi, the approach that is associated with Rashi, argues that it is, or that was initially attributed to Rashi, argues that we issue this invitation specifically here because of the mandate to fast on Erev Pesach. This is also something that we discussed this past Shabbos. The Mishnah at the beginning of Perek Arvei Pesachim says that in the afternoon of Erev Pesach, Lo Yochal Adam Ad Shetechshach, you're not supposed to eat until it gets dark. And we saw the Rashbam who says that it's to maintain a proper appetite for the eating of the matzah on the Leil HaSeder. So you're not supposed to eat on the afternoon before Pesach. And the Mishnah explicitly goes on to say, Afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyesev, even a poor person is not supposed to take part until the time for leaning has come, in essence, until the Seder has come. So you end up with lots of people who are poor and hungry right before the Seder. So Rashi says, you're issuing an invitation as a response to that halachic mandate. We force everybody, including the poor and destitute, to fast on Erev Pesach, so we invite them at the beginning of the Seder in order to make sure that they are properly provided for after that period of fasting. The Chida suggests that the invitation that we issue at the beginning of the Seder is based on a medrash that suggests that one of the reasons why Klal Yisrael were redeemed, one of the reasons for their redemption, was because of the mitzvah of tzedakah. Now, we don't actually have access to that medrash. We don't know where that medrash is. We have lots of medrashim that give us lots of reasons for why the Bnei Yisrael were taken out of Mitzrayim. We noted on Shabbos a medrash Vayikra Rabba. It says because Loshinu Eshamam Veslashonam, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't speak Lashon Hara, they didn't engage in promiscuity. There were lots of different reasons that are given. We do not have a medrash that asserts that it is because of tzedakah, but evidently the Chidah did have access to a medrash that we do not have access to. And he said that it is because the Bnei Yisrael engaged in tzedakah, and in my mind that too is quite significant. But in order to frame the significance of all of it, let me share with you a comment of the Ritva again. The Ritva suggests that the reason why we specifically open up with an invitation at the Seder is because it is a sign of chayrus. It is a sign of the freedom and the luxury that we are celebrating on the night of the Seder. It's not just a random invitation that we happen to issue for any of the justifications or halachic reasons that were given before. This invitation is key towards exhibiting the chayrus, the freedom and luxury that really is core to the night of the Seder. He says, "V'yesh od be'inyan." There's another reason for all of this. "She'anu omrim," we say, "ki kishahayinu b'mitzrayim," when we were in Egypt, "hayalanu lechem tzaru mayim lachatz v'midav mishkal v'mitzura v'at," we really were only given basic subsistence, or barely even subsistence. We were given basic water, maybe a little bit of the stale, coarse bread. We didn't really have much, and we certainly didn't have anything to share. "V'ata yesh lanu achol v'savoa, v'hosar lechem v'yayin v'derech chayrus." But now we have so much. Now we have so much that we're able to provide and we're able to share for others. According to the Ritva, the invitation of others to our Seder is a sign of what it means to be a wealthy person, a wealthy man. When you have wealth, you're able to share it with others. And that too is a luxury. The Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim didn't even have the ability to share what they had. It was so basic, it was so meager that it was barely even subsistence. You certainly couldn't even dream of inviting others to your table. You didn't have enough for yourself, for your family and children. You couldn't invite others to join you. But now, in our state of freedom, in our state of redemption, that Hashem has taken us out of Mitzrayim, we now have this gift that we're able to share what we have with others as well. And to me, that ritva was always very stirring, very striking, and very powerful. Because to me, it is a statement about what freedom truly is and what luxury in our lives means and how the Torah perceives wealth and what wealth is supposed to be and what wealth is supposed to do. We often think of wealth and ostentatious luxury in terms of our material possessions. We think of it in terms of the number of bedrooms in your house and the number of digits that it costs to purchase the car that you drive. How much you make, how much your salary is, what kinds of vacations you go on. We often think of luxury and chayrus in those terms, in those coarse terms, in those material terms that really are how society around us identifies wealth, freedom, redemption, and all the joys of life, of a life of freedom. But from a Torah standpoint, true freedom is exhibited in the ability to share with others. It's not about all that I can acquire for myself. It's not about all the material possessions that I am seeking or that perhaps I already have. It's about the ability to open up my home to others, to make sure they are able to partake, to make sure that others are able to join that celebration as well. That is the opening sign of freedom, of chayrus, that we have at our Seder. And when taken in that regard, perhaps you can begin to understand some of the other features that we've been discussing until now about the Halach Ma'anya. Why this intense concern that perhaps the Malachim are going to report on us and they're going to say something negative about the way we're conducting ourselves at the Seder. They're going to say that we're not deserving of all the material wealth that we have. I think part of that concern is a way of highlighting to ourselves at the very outset of the Seder precisely this message that the Ritva highlights at the end of Halach Ma'anya. As we engage in this lavish and extravagant and festive meal, we have to remind ourselves that it's not just about us. And if we make it just about us, then we're deserving of the Ayin Hara, or whoever you interpret this concern, this spiritual concern, that Malachim are going to testify against us. We're deserving of that because we've lost focus. We've lost proper perspective on what the entire Seder is about. And I think perhaps that also explains the comment of the Miyuchas L'Rashi on why we're celebrating that Karban of the Ani. It's a very stirring image, this Karban of the Ani. This is somebody who doesn't have money for themselves, but is still trying to scrap something together in order to be able to give something to others. In this instance, to give something to Hashem. It's a tragic image and also a heroic image. This is somebody, again, who can't afford a larger Karban, but is doing everything they absolutely can in order to gather something that they can give away rather than just keeping for themselves. It's in reference to that Karban that the Gemara famously says, that it doesn't matter how much you give. Some people can give a lot, some people give a little. As long as your proper kavana is in place, as long as you're doing what you can, you're doing your best for Hashem, that is considered equal measure. It's equally valuable in the eyes of the Almighty. And that tragic and heroic image of the person who's doing their best to get by but still manages to save something for others is precisely the image that we want at the beginning of the Seder. When we recognize that we are now in this state of great freedom, and again, luxury and extravagance, certainly for us, our job, our mission, is to be able to share that with others as well. And perhaps finally it explains the Medrash of the Chidah. The Chidah says that Klal Yisrael were redeemed because of tzedakah, because of tzedakah. We don't have access to that Medrash, but the Medrash is still quite powerful. It is asserting that the Bnei Yisrael, when they were in the depths of that slavery of Mitzrayim, when they barely had enough food for themselves, they still managed to look out for each other. They still managed to share their meager material possessions and make sure that others were invited to the Seder as well. And for us, that is the true Chayrus that we celebrate. I'm very fond of a quote from Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. It appears in his Pesach Haggadah. Commenting on Halach Ma'anya, he says, "This is a strange invitation. This is the bread of oppression our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come in and eat. What hospitality is it to offer the hungry the taste of suffering? In fact, though, this is a profound insight into the nature of slavery and freedom. As noted, matzah represents two things. It is the food of slaves, and also the bread eaten by the Israelites as they left Egypt in liberty. What transforms the bread of oppression into the bread of freedom is the willingness to share it with others. Sharing food is the first act through which slaves become free human beings. One who fears tomorrow does not offer his bread to others. But one who is willing to divide his food with a stranger has already shown himself to be capable of fellowship and faith, the two things from which hope is born. That is why we begin the Seder by inviting others to join us. Bread shared is no longer the bread of oppression. Reaching out to others, giving help to the needy and companionship to those who are along, we bring freedom into the world, and with freedom, God." That is ultimately what the Seder is about. It's not just an invitation to make sure others join us for our Seder. That invitation is just as important for us as it is for the people that we invite. It is a reminder to us about all that Cheres is about all that we're celebrating at the night of the Seder. And frankly, it's something that we should bear in mind throughout the rest of the year as well. When we engage in our Yom Tov meals, as the Rambam says, we engage in our Shabbos meals, when we just engage in our daily activities, part of living as free Jews, no longer under the yoke of Paro, no longer under the slavery of Egypt, is celebrating our ability to give to others, to share with others, to make sure they are able to share in our joy, to make sure they're able to partake in the joys of life. By doing so, may we all be zocheh to true Simchas Yom Tov and the true Cheres of the holiday of Pesach.